Presenting sponsor of the Audible is Trader Joe's. Inside Trader Joe's is a five-part podcast series that takes you literally inside Trader Joe's. Go inside the TJ's tasting panel, travel to wineries in Napa Valley and around the world to discover the next great Trader Joe's products. Discover why they wear those super fashionable Hawaiian shirts. You'll find Inside Trader Joe's on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. Welcome to The Audible. I'm Stuart Mandel, joined as always by Bruce Feldman, who has been racking up the air miles, or I don't know, maybe the driving. Did you fly from Chicago to Columbus?
I did. It's a it's like a 5-hour drive. That's a little too much for me to do at this time.
Yeah, I'm not thrilled with anything more than 4, but we have colleagues of ours that don't mind driving 8 or 9 hours, so
not on a trip after I've already been on the road for 3 days and I'm just going to be sitting here. So I figured, all right, let me just fly here because I got enough crazy travel that's going to happen. Like, I'm in the middle of this 10-day stretch. It's a little bit chaotic. So basically, I'm in Columbus to work on some TV features till Tuesday. I'm going to fly home, take my kids trick-or-treating for a day, and then fly back right back to Columbus because we are doing Nebraska, Ohio State this weekend. So a little bit of a hectic.
Well, I admire your, you know, being a dad there, and you could have very easily just set up shop at the Spring Hill Suites or wherever you are there in Columbus, but you know, you're traveling cross country to be there for trick or treat, and I admire that. But there's a really big game Saturday night in college football with LSU Alabama that we were going to get to in a second, but I do want to ask about both of your trips from this past weekend. First of all, you went to lovely Evanston, Illinois. You got to take in your first game at raucous, you know, hostile Ryan Field, where Northwestern beats Wisconsin pretty handily and is now sitting alone in first place at 5-1 in the Big Ten, which is not something I would have said was a possibility when they lost a home to Akron early in the season. Your takeaways?
Evanston itself is a really charming, like, very pretty place. Stadium is obviously a little bit underwhelming, but their new facilities is really nice. I mean, everybody's hyped it up, and it's really, really nice. So it was an interesting game because Alex Hornibrook wasn't going to play. And so Jack Cohn, who hadn't played yet this year, and they're trying to redshirt him. And so he's, you know, this is going to count as one of his 4 games. He struggled, and they had a bunch of unforced errors, what I would describe it. I mean, they had turnovers where it was like 2 of the 3 turnovers didn't even seem like really Northwestern had a ton to do with it. It was just Wisconsin issues. And Clayton Thorson struggled with his own turnover issues. But Northwestern shortens games, and I think they're pretty disciplined. And they got a nice streak going here. I don't know what it was, like 12 out of 13 in the Big Ten. I mean, it's weird because in the middle of that, they got, you know, losses to Duke and loss to a MAC school. But, you know, Fitz is a good coach. And I think that it's an interesting team. One of the things we talked about in the game was they have 7 starters who Northwestern's their only Power 5 offer. One of those seven is Isaiah Bowser, who's really come on the last 2 weeks, had 100 yards rushing. He's a workhorse freshman running back. And really, really had a nice game because Jonathan Taylor had 2 fumbles and really struggled. So I don't know what to make of Northwestern's chances against Notre Dame this weekend. It was kind of a, I'll be honest, it was a bizarre game in a lot of ways. A lot of stuff went on that day away from the field that was quite honestly pretty distracting and kind of consuming. So. But anyway, that was my take on Northwestern Wisconsin.
And Bruce is referring to the tragedy at Congregation in Pittsburgh, which, unbeknownst to me, he found out about from me retweeting about it.
It was crazy because I don't check Twitter hardly at all during my games, and then at halftime, I talked to Fitz coming off the field as he went in the locker room, and I was waiting. I don't know, I had 10 minutes to wait before Paul Chris was going to come out. And I looked at Twitter and I was like, oh, my God. I mean, and it's jarring and it's really sobering and it's really sad. And, you know, it was like on my mind, you know, it's still kind of on my mind, but it was, you know, it was kind of hard to stay focused through that just because it's like, it is your worst nightmare, you know, and to see that it happened and see some of this stuff. And I don't want to go any further down, you know, further down the road on this kind of stuff. Cause people, listen to the podcast, hear us talk about college football, but it was, you know, it's the first time I think I've done a game where something off the field like that just kind of took me away from the game in my head, and I just couldn't really focus on it from that point on.
Understandable. I mean, it's awful, and you're right. We shouldn't go too far down that road here in this college football podcast, but needless to say, I was pretty shaken up that morning as somebody who grew up going to a synagogue just like that one in Cincinnati, and there are obviously, you know, Pittsburgh and Cincinnati are often kind of linked together just because of their proximity and the river and all of that. So I have no way, good way to segue out of that. You brought up the Notre Dame game. So first of all, it is crazy that they've won 12 of their last 13 Big Ten games, and yet, you know, they're not even in the top 25 right now. They have three losses. And also this Notre Dame game, if they were to lose this Notre Dame game, which obviously the Vegas odds would say they will, They would possibly win the Big Ten West and go 0-3 non-conference. I'm not sure that's... I can't imagine a Power 5 team has ever won its division and gone winless out of conference. But of course, they're not talking about possibly losing Notre Dame there. This has been a long time in the making. That game was this home-and-home was announced in 2011. Notre Dame has not come to Evanston since 1976 or 77. And, you know, they played 4 years ago in South Bend, and Northwestern was not very good that year and managed to win that game in overtime. So a lot of people are really fired up for that there. Now, so you go from there to Columbus for this TV feature. You were at Urban Meyer's press conference Monday morning when an interesting set of questions came up.
Yeah, Dave Biddle, who's been around the team for a long time, asked Urban about the rumors around him about whether he might retire after this season. And Urban said, I plan on coaching. And Dave Biddle was sitting like right in front of him, like first row in the middle, and then said, so for sure you'll be back next year? And Urban was like, yes. And, you know, it's the kind of question where, you know, first of all, Urban Meyer's, I think there's a lot of people who are very cynical about what he says and that, but it's the kind of question where I'm not sure anybody, because as we're taping this, Lincoln Riley's getting hit up with questions about whether he would go be interested in the NFL because the Browns reportedly just fired their head coach, Hugh Jackson. So, I mean, it's one of those questions where it's, you know, you kind of shrug your shoulders at it. I'll say this from just being in the room, there was a few questions Urban got asked where you'd look at his body language and it just, you don't want to read too much into it, but it was a little strange. He would give thoughtful answers after an extremely long pause. And then at one point, another writer asked him brought up Kirk Herbstreit saying he looked anguished. And the context of that question being, hey, it's not just some people on message boards. It's somebody who probably knows you about as well as anybody in the media. And Urban said, well, I don't know. And he kind of like, well, I'm not sure what he means by anguish. And he said, Kirk Herbstreit said, you know, kind of like repeated back, Kirk Herbstreit said that. And he kind of said, look, I'm fine. I want Ohio State to be successful in the worst way. I don't want people to worry about me. And, you know, it's all about that. I don't think anything that was said will do anything to quiet down the rumors that he might not be the head coach there for whatever reason next year. And also, you know, wrapped in the context of that was they're coming off getting blown out at Purdue. And we talked about that a lot with James Laurinaitis last week. But so he was asked about what they did in the bye week and everything else. And, you know, it's an interesting situation. It really is. I mean, I'm curious. Our crew at Fox did their game the week after they had gotten blown out at Iowa. I do feel like this is a little bit of a different dynamic now just because of everything that happened off the field with all the Zach Smith stuff. And now, like before that, it felt like a one-off, and this doesn't feel like it was a one-off. So we'll see how this is going to unfold as the last month of the season kicks in.
I mean, Ohio State fans aren't going to like it, but those questions are going to persist for obvious reasons. We've been down this road with him before at Florida, where he retired for health reasons twice, you know, came back a couple of days later the first time, then then left after the 2010 season. I mean, you know, you described to us in detail being there when he, you know, kneeled down on the sideline with the intense headache a couple weeks ago. He has looked anguished on the sideline during these TV broadcasts. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, I mean, Nebraska has a terrible defense, so I would assume they're going to score a lot of points on them. But they also have some guys that can get free on offense, Nebraska does. So let's see what their defense can do. I mean, it's certainly, as you've learned more about the whole landscape and you see, okay, TCU is having a terrible season and they had trouble with them. Penn State, I think, you know, they have a good record. They survived last week against Iowa. I think with the benefit of a little distance, they're not quite as elite as maybe we thought they were at the time. And then obviously really rough loss to Purdue, who turned around and lost to Michigan State. So we'll see how they finish down the stretch. By the way, I mentioned TCU. I wanted to ask you a question. I'm going to throw out a few teams here, and I want you to tell me who's the biggest disappointment in the country this year. TCU, Washington, which lost 12-10 to Cal the other day and benched Jake Browning at one point and now has three losses. Auburn, who we've talked about on here before. And who else?
Well, you could put Wisconsin in there. Look, I'm gonna own up to a couple of bad picks. I thought Wisconsin and Washington would both be playoff caliber teams. They are not. I was actually surprised. Somehow, Washington was listed as number 19 by the coaches poll. This week, they're 6-3, just lost to a average at best Cal team. And they've been kind of sputtering for much of the year. And that surprised me. You know, those are, to me, the Washington and Wisconsin are pretty big disappointments. I mean, Auburn for the first half of the year was a dud. I think, look, we think Louisville has been horrible. I mean, I don't think we thought they were going to be very good going into the year, but I don't think we thought they'd be this bad, right?
You weren't kidding, by the way. Washington is still somehow ranked 19th.
Yeah, were you didn't, you thought I just made that up? I think I told you that the other day and you were like, what?
It just didn't seem possible. They're ahead of Virginia. Give the Cavs a little bit of love. My gosh. Let's see, if they're in there, who did the coaches leave out that's in the AP poll? They left out...
A&M is technically in the poll.
I think it's all the other teams. So it's really... You're trading Washington for A&M, but
they're really in there. They're in the top 20. No,
they're 19th. Yeah, that was a bad loss the other day for them. I mean, I have to say TCU. I had very high expectations for them. I actually picked them to win the Big 12, and they are now tied for last place with Kansas State because Kansas got a big win over them the other day. But Wisconsin, you know, I had them in the playoff, but I think some things have happened there that you maybe couldn't account for. For one thing, their star receiver being suspended right before the season. And then they've just had so many... It was an inexperienced defense to begin with, and they've had so many injuries. Dakota Dixon is a, you know, All-America caliber safety. Others as well. So now I'm not saying they would be in the top five right now if all other things were equal. I mean, certainly quarterback has been a problem for them.
Okay, let me tee you up on this. So Washington... Now they've had injuries. I don't think they've had as many injuries as Wisconsin. Quite honestly, everybody has some level of attrition, but they have a top 10 defense and they are 6-3. And I think the one really good game Jake Browning has had this year was the game our crew did when they just blew out BYU. What do you make of Jake Browning? And Chris Peterson pulled him from the game. And then Jake Haener, their young quarterback, who's a backup, only played really in mop up duty before. Threw a pick six pretty easy, and I think that was about all Cal managed on offensively. What's going on there?
Well, I feel like we talked about this a couple weeks ago, and you got on me for being too critical of a college player. But I don't really know how to say it otherwise. I mean, Matt Brown, our one of our editors and just a stats guru, pulled some data for me a couple weeks ago about putting Tua's 8-game start in historical context. It wasn't all time. It was over, I don't know, maybe the last decade. So it was, you know, quarterbacks who had the best first 8 games. And Jake Browning was on there. Jake Browning from 2016, his first 8 games. He was so good, those 8 games, to be put on this list. And now it's at the point where Chris Peterson benches him in a game they were leading at the time, in a road game, just to try to spark the offense. So it's unfortunate. I think he's obviously regressed. Now, he did have John Ross when he was a sophomore. They've had some other good receivers, obviously Dante Pettis. This is not the same receiving core, but I do think he's regressed in a big way. Let's stay out west for a second. In fact, let's talk about their rival. I went to the Washington State Stanford game on Saturday night, me and a few dozen of my closest friends. I sent a picture out that got a lot of attention of the crowd right when the game started. Now keep in mind, I'm on the side, the press box on the side that's more likely to be full. But this was the other side, and it looks like there's absolutely nobody there for this game between two ranked teams, Pac-12 North showdown. It's really, again, I can't believe the national championship game is going to be played in this area. Gardner Minshew is the real deal. He was in the zone at one point. He was 19 for 19 in the second half. You know, they got down 28-14. They were down 28-17 at halftime. And once they got going in the second half, there was no doubt in my mind that they were gonna end up winning the game. Even after Stanford tied it up with about a minute and a half left, he marched them right down the field. He threw a fantastic pass on third and two that ended up going for about 40 yards to set up the game-winning field goal. At this moment, Bruce, the first-place teams in each division of the Pac-12 are Washington State and Utah. Of those two, which do you feel better about?
Oh, man, that's not where I thought you were going. You know what? You said Gardner Minshew's been in the zone since pretty much the day he decommitted from Alabama to go graduate assistant. He's been terrific. I had him in my Heisman top three going into last weekend, and now I moved him up to number two. Now, obviously, Tua has a wide lead, and we're going to see what we'll talk more about Tua in a minute. But he's been terrific. I mean, he really has been, and hasn't gotten enough attention, but I think more and more is going to come. I have more confidence in Utah than I do in Washington State, in part because whenever Washington State has played the Apple Cup since Chris Peterson's been there, they have beat the heck out of the Cougars. And until that changes, I mean, it's hard to pick against them. I know Washington is struggling, but there's been, you know, Washington hasn't had some great years, and they've still whipped Washington State. So there's a chance my crew is going to be there for that game in Pullman Thanksgiving weekend. It'll be interesting. You know, I don't know. You're the playoff guy here on our Athletic. If Washington State were to run the table, they would be 12-1. Their non-conference schedule is pretty atrocious. But do you think, would you give them more than a 15% chance at 12-1 to make the playoff?
Did you say 15%?
Yes, 1-5.
Yeah, I would definitely give them higher than that. I mean, I know the narrative has already been established that the Pac-12 is eliminated. I don't think people maybe, I think part of that is probably because people just assume Washington State's not going to run the table. I mean, they started 7-1 last year too, and they ended up 9-4. I do feel that there is a different vibe to this team because of how well Gardner Minshew is playing. Yeah, I mean, if you get to the end of the season, you're a 12-1 Power 5 champ, you're obviously going to be on a very short list of candidates, but they're probably going to be at the back of the line because, you know, not only did they not play anybody out of conference, but I mean, the Washington team in 2016, they didn't play anybody out of conference, but they had three or four wins in conference against teams that ended up in the top 25. And you look at the Pac-12 now, how many Pac-12 teams realistically are going to be in the final, you know, on the final day of the season ranked in the top 25? You know, Utah, I think, will certainly be there. They're playing exceptionally well. But I don't think Stanford's going to be there. Maybe Washington will still be there. Oregon, you know, after getting crushed by Arizona the other night, doesn't look like they're going to be there. So it's just, they're just not going to have a resume.
I agree with you. I think that's well said. Before we leave the Pac-12, one other thing I know you wanted to hit on it. Clay Helton's future at USC does not look good. It's looking bleaker by the week. So any chance he saves his job?
Zero. 0.0% chance.
Wow.
They're 4-4. It's the first time. Like, what did Antonio, our guy Antonio Morales, write? I think he said that this is the first time since 2001, Pete Carroll's first season, that they go into November 500 or worse. You know, and they're games that they shouldn't be losing. Now, I know they were down to their third string quarterback the other day, but they are still expected to beat ASU at home. Certainly not supposed to get blown out by Utah. And it's just everybody's off the bandwagon. I mean, I know Saturday
who was on the bandwagon, Stu? Let's be realistic. Nobody at USC was actually on the bandwagon, I think.
I don't know about nobody.
Nobody at USC was on the bandwagon who mattered, because the guy who was on the bandwagon before, Pat Hayden, is no longer in control. And so even though Clay Helton won a Pac-12 title and won a Rose Bowl, and up till last weekend was undefeated in 19 games at the Coliseum. I think it was just waiting for a bad season before they ripped the Band-Aid off, and I think that's what's happening now that there's no Sam Darnold. And
that's why I say 0.0 is also the lowest. I know it was this like epic Saturday in LA sports and lots of places to be, including the World Series, but it was the lowest attended USC home game since 2001 as well. So, I don't think the question at this point to me is not, is Clay Helton going to be fired? It's who can USC hire that will end this run of uninspired hires? You know, let you go after Pete Carroll. It's been Lane Kiffin, Steve Sarkisian, Clay Helton. Is this, will Lynn Swann finally break the chain and go out and hire the best coach, not a guy with necessarily part of the USC family?
Yeah, look, there's a chance they could go back to the USC family. I don't know how it would break, but like, would Pete Carroll ever come back? I don't know about that. You know, look, there's some people at USC I've heard who really like Hugh Jackson. Hugh Jackson's going to be out of a job. That to me sounds like a huge head scratcher.
You must have missed the news this morning. Hugh Jackson is out of a job.
I said that.
Okay.
USC, some of the USC power brokers do really puzzling things.
If USC fires Clay Helton to hire Hugh Jackson, they might as well just punt. They might as well say, you know what, we're done trying to win national championships here. That would be the most uninspired thing you could possibly do.
Look, I mean, I think there's going to be some people around USC who are going to go, look, we've, as you said, have shanked a couple of off the driving range because we tried to get too cute and hire people who are close to us. Do we go after a James Franklin, somebody like that, who we think we'd have a shot to reel in?
And now you're talking.
Okay. So I don't know. We'll see. Right now, Clay Helton is still their coach. And I think the question, I had this conversation with somebody who's connected at USC on Sunday, which was, if USC was going to make this move on Clay Helton, when would they make it? Because if you get rid of him, and let's say you make T. Martin your interim head coach, and T. Martin is the best recruiter they have on that staff by a mile, and T. Martin ends up, you know, leading them to a 3-0, or if they did it this week, which they're not going to, I don't think, then 4-0, then they run the risk of, oh, here's another interim guy who's had success and he's got some momentum and the recruits really like him. And so I think they're in that position where I don't think they want to create their own dilemma if there's people thinking that direction already, which I think there are.
Well, they already whiffed on that once. You know, they could have just given Ed Orgeron the job, and because he had a great second half to that season. I know that some USC fans are starting to pine for Jeff Brohm. And
I don't think Jeff Brohm, I could be, this words could come back to bite me. You and I both think Jeff Brohm is a phenomenal coach.
Mm-hmm.
I think there is a better chance Louisville can get out of Bobby Petrino's contract and fire him and take Jeff Brohm. I think there's a better chance Jeff Brohm might stay at Purdue, or there's a better chance Jeff Brohm, like if I'm the Cleveland Browns, I'm calling Jeff Brohm and trying to get him.
Don't you think the Cleveland Browns are going to be making a call to Lincoln Riley?
They may.
That seems like a no-brainer.
Because he had Baker Mayfield is the obvious one, yeah.
He had Baker Mayfield, and
you know, he's never coached in the NFL at all at any level. He's never been around the NFL.
Correct, and there's obviously a history of, I mean, people feel, oh, they tried Chip Kelly, that didn't work. You know, there's the obvious skepticism toward college coaches making the transition to the NFL, but there's also an infatuation right now because of Baker, and more so because of Pat Mahomes. Hey, we should tee up your story here in a second. There's just a fascination with that offense, with the air raid.
Speaking of which,
there'd be nobody better to hire to run that.
Actually, there is one person better to hire.
Mike Leach?
Mike Leach is having a ridiculously good year. You're the Cleveland Browns. You have screwed up everything at every possible turn. I mean, I don't know. It's the craziest thought in the world. You're the Cleveland Browns.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Mike Leach was the only Power 5 school. It wasn't really Mike Leach's idea. It was Eric Morris's on his staff. But they did offer Baker Mayfield 6 years ago. Now, you know, Mike Leach is full on nuts, but
he was in a great mood Saturday night, let me tell you.
So what do you think of that idea? I'm not saying, by the way, I should preface this because I am not saying there is any like Mike Leach, nobody who works with Mike Leach, nobody who's connected to Cleveland Browns, nobody has speculated anything of there's any interest on any part. So this is just, you were talking about Gardner Minshew. I was looking at the Browns stuff and I was like, all right, let me throw this at Stu and see what he thinks.
I cannot picture Mike Leach in the NFL.
No, I'm not saying can you picture him in. How do you think, like, if you're the Browns, how do you think that would work?
Well, you have to keep in mind that the Browns are a notoriously incompetent franchise, so who knows what they're thinking. But in terms of, why don't I answer it this way? Would it make sense for the Cleveland Browns to look at Mike Leach? Yes, it would make sense for them to look at it. It's just, I don't know, like, you can't, in the NFL, you can't go to Key West for weeks at a time and coach the team.
You actually can. I mean, he doesn't have to worry about recruiting in Cleveland.
But in the NFL, you're supposed to be sleeping at your office. You're supposed to be evaluating tape all hours of the day. Like, that's just the culture of the NFL. He's just not that. Like, he's, you know, I mean, look, he's had a heck of a career at two different schools. And yet he's still at Washington State, not, you know, Florida or LSU or wherever. You know, should USC, here, let's do it more realistically.
No,
should USC hire Mike Leach?
Absolutely not.
Well, how does he make more sense for the Cleveland Browns than a team in his own conference?
Because with USC, there's a lot of other factors that go into it as a college coach. In the NFL, it's just football.
Let me give you another interesting name I've heard as a possibility for USC. Kyle Whittingham.
Look, I think Kyle Whittingham's a terrific coach. He's 59 years old. I mean, look, Leach is right around that age now, too. But I don't know. He's only really coached there all that time. Look, if USC hired Kyle Whittingham, that wouldn't be a bad hire. I mean, because all the stuff that USC isn't good at, Kyle Whittingham would fix.
Yeah, USC. Toughness. I think USC fans, you know, some fan bases want somebody who'll come in and light up the scoreboard and throw the ball 60 times. USC fans want somebody who, in the spirit of, you know, John McKay will run.
Punch somebody in
the face. Student body left, student body right. Kyle Whittingham's teams are, you know, without question, some of the most physical in the country year in and year out. Now, my only question would be, you know, Utah is a school that finds the hidden gems. Can he recruit 5-star kids, top 5 classes? That's the expectation at USC. But in terms of, as a football coach, I think, and we should mention he's from Southern California.
He isn't. His dad was an NFL player. He was born there. He spent most of his life in Utah. He's not, I mean, I know what Wikipedia says, but he's really, I mean, he hasn't spent that much time in Southern California.
Well, fair enough. But, you know, in terms of just as a football coach, that would be intriguing. I don't know. I have a feeling we're going to be talking about this more whenever they make the move. I mean, frankly, I don't think there's any real advantage to them firing Clay Helton before the end of the regular season, but I don't know. It's a complete mystery there what they're going to do. Okay, let's look ahead. LSU-Bama, Saturday night, Baton Rouge. I will be there. Number 1 versus number 4. I wrote all about this in the Forward Pass lead, and it seems like I'm the only person in America who thinks this is going to be a game.
The Vegas people don't think it's going to be a game at all.
I mean, I threw a lot of stats into that column to try to tell people that, hey, it may be, right? They may beat them 45-10 like they have everybody else. I don't know. But there's some things to be aware of. A, as great as Tua has been, as amazing as that offense has been, not a single one of those first 8 opponents currently ranks higher than 90th in the country in yards per play allowed. And yes, Alabama's, whatever Alabama did to them counts toward that, but I mean, we're 8 games into the season at this point. It's not affecting that, you know, that disproportionately, okay? Stat number 2. And by the way, you should go to theathletic.com and read these stats and part of this column. One of the things I love right that we're doing this year is we have a partnership with Sports Info Solutions, and we can get pretty much, you name the stat, we have access to it. So I wanted to know what Tua's production has been this year when pressured, which obviously is not very often, because he's about to face a defense that may actually be able to hit him. And believe it or not, Tua, under pressure, goes from being a 70.4% passer to a 46.3% passer. Now, he has still thrown 8 touchdowns when pressured, so it's not like he's terrible. But it'll be interesting to see what happens if Dave Aranda and those guys can get to him.
Can I stop you on that point there?
Yes.
Caleb Chasson, who is LSU's best pass rusher by a lot, he's been out since the start of the year. He got hurt in the Miami game. He's out for the season. They really miss him. LSU's defense is outstanding. The one weakness they have is they struggle to get pressure on the quarterback. Michael Divinity has really improved this year. He's probably their best pass rusher.
Are you familiar with Grant Delpit?
Stu, I'm more familiar with LSU than probably anybody will have on the podcast at this point.
That guy gets to the quarterback and then does everything else as well.
Well, that guy may have to. Here's the problem if you're LSU. They're going to play better slot receivers and better receivers than they have seen this year. I mean, that's going to put a lot of pressure. As good as Christian Fulton and Greedy Williams are at the corners, you're also going to be, we haven't said this yet, Devin White, who's one of probably two best linebackers in the country. He's going to be out for the first half of this game. So I just think because they have a hard time getting pressure on the quarterback and because Alabama's so good at receiver right now with really guys who thrive in space and good out of the slot, that's a problem for Dave Aranda. Now he's got an extra week to try to figure something out. But I have a story that's coming out on The Athletic in a day about just what makes Tua so special. And I've talked to a lot of people who face Tua and also some who have played both teams. And the feeling on this, or seen a lot of both teams, I should say, is that LSU is pretty pedestrian on offense. As nice as Joe Burrow has played, as good as those running backs have been, I mean, they can't. It's a stretch to think LSU can win a game 35-31, even in Tiger Stadium. I just don't see that happening. But as you said, one thing we haven't seen, and this has come up a little bit from some of the people I've talked to, is there are times where they think Tua can be a little careless with the ball. He was careless in the game where he was the hero against Georgia. He got away with it. But if LSU can do that on the road and put him in a place where he really hasn't been, then you see how Alabama responds. I don't know.
Tua, understandably, at this point, probably feels like he can get away with just about anything because nobody has stopped him. So yeah, that's a possibility. We would agree LSU is a good running team. Alabama has had the number one or two rushing defense in the country the past three seasons, but this year they are 29th. They are a little bit mortal there. And then just the last one that I came across that's a historical stat. For anybody who thinks that Alabama just automatically is going to go there and score 40 or 45 or 50, Alabama has not scored more than 21 points in regulation of a game at LSU since 2002. It's just throwing that out there. I think at the end of the day, you brought up a key point, Joe Burrow. Been a nice story, but at the end of the day, he's the 13th rated passer in the SEC. The team that finally beats Alabama, if that happens this year, is going to have an elite quarterback like Deshaun Watson 2 years ago, who can, I mean, it's still a very, very inexperienced Alabama secondary. So I think it's got to be a guy who can throw downfield and take advantage of that.
Can I transition for selfish purposes, since you just said elite quarterback, to something?
Sure.
Let's talk about my story for a second.
I did mean to cue you up on that rather than you having to self-promote yourself.
It's okay. We're shameless at The Athletic because it's a subscription site.
No, so, I'm really excited about this story. So this weekend, we both noticed this on the calendar a while back. Oklahoma plays Texas Tech Saturday night. And then in the NFL on Sunday, Baker Mayfield plays Pat Mahomes. And the last time those two met, you take it from there.
That was the first game I worked with Brady Quinn and Joe Davis for Fox. And obviously there was a lot of fireworks with Baker. I mean, the FU chants, because he was making his first game back in Lubbock after leaving there with a lot of rancor, was wild. The fans were into it. Baker was into it. It was just a crazy scene. And OU jumped out to a 13-0 lead. And from that point on, it was a crazy shootout where there were really no stops. And so to revisit that night, I ended up talking to about 30-plus people, and you get some interesting comments. You know, both defensive coordinators, Mike Stoops, who's now no longer at OU, as everybody knows, and David Gibbs, who's probably one of the better people to interview because he is brutally honest and self-effacing and really good about stuff like this. They were god-awful that year on defense. And one of the things that I think Teddy Lehman, old terrific OU linebacker who at the time was OU's sideline reporter on the radio call, pointed out, you know, as great as Baker was, and Teddy thinks Baker's fantastic, he was like, a lot of stuff was easier for him. Pat Mahomes was doing ridiculous stuff because he's you know, getting pressured. He's shaking off 330-pound Neville Gallimore, and he's, you know, taking two steps and slinging it off platform 40 yards downfield. I mean, they were 20 of 25 on third down, which is insane. Both teams, 854 total yards. Mahomes threw for 734, ran for almost 100 more. And as we reported in the story, not only did so with a sprained shoulder, which had been bothering him the whole year, he broke his wrist in that game and still did it. So it was a fun story to work on at times. Sometimes it wasn't so much fun, but it was interesting. And as we're taping this podcast, I got one detail that I'm going to try to shoehorn into the story. So there are four NFL scouts who were at the game, and I reached out to three of the four, and I got one of them, who is an older scout for the Chargers, Tom McConaughey, who, you know, he wasn't, as a lot of people, he wasn't the biggest fan of the display of defense in that game. Well, kind of cringe. Now, he loved Pat Mahomes, loved him, and stood on the table for him. And the one thing he said was, just make sure he doesn't end up in our division. He ended up in their division as a rival, so that's not good. But as we're taping this, one of the other scouts got back to me after a little while and said, hey, Bruce, I was scheduled to attend that game and made it to the parking lot, but never went in because of food poisoning. The thing I remember most of that night is never eat oysters in Amarillo, Texas. Wish I could be of more of help. Jeez. Because how magical that night was. But unfortunately for me, it was the complete opposite.
I think you need to update the story and get that in there. That's an amazing detail. You know, probably even more so than Pat Mahomes' brother getting kicked out for throwing a tortilla at Baker Mayfield.
Yes.
That's remarkable. I mean, I feel bad for the guy, but that's a crazy response you got. Look, I'm one of the many who at the time was guilty of just looking at that 66-59 score and the fact that, you know, it was like 10 straight touchdown drives and just saying, well, that's Big 12 defenses for you. You know, and obviously Texas Tech, as you said, they fully would admit they were not good on defense that year. But I think we need to now look back and say those are two pretty special quarterbacks going head-to-head, and as they will this coming Sunday. We got some great mailbag questions this week. Let's get to it.
All right.
As always, you can send your emails to theaudiblepod@gmail.com. Where do we start?
Let's start with Joe Simmons from Greenville, South Carolina. Stu and Bruce, every year the first playoff rankings, by the way, which is Tuesday night, have a couple eye-opening discrepancies between what they value and what the AP voters think. In your estimation, what teams will be a few spots higher in the playoff rankings than the AP poll? Conversely, which teams will be a few spots lower? Thanks, Joe. Let me take the teams I think will be higher.
Good, because I was add some teams that will be lower.
Okay. I'm going to have an SEC flavor in this. I'm going to say, let's start off at the top end of that poll. I think Kentucky at number 11 will actually be higher than that. I think they may be in the top 10 because they have a double-digit win at Florida. That's a really good win. They blew out Mississippi State 28-7. That's a really, really good win. You know, South Carolina has a winning record, 4-3. They beat them by two touchdowns. That's all good stuff. And their only loss is in overtime at Texas A&M, who's ranked. So that's, I think they're going to be higher than that. I think Florida at number 13, because they have that win over LSU, I think they might be a little higher. And then speaking of our friend Kyle Whittingham, I think his Utah Utes will be higher than number 16. I don't know if they'll be that much higher, but I think they may be in the top 15.
I agree on all three of those. Kentucky will be ahead of the teams that are above them in the AP poll right now. They will be ahead of Washington State and UCF and possibly even Ohio State, who somehow rose three spots on their bye week this week. My takeaway in looking at this AP poll, so it was a historic week. I guess seven teams entered the AP poll that weren't there before, and that was a record. And it was included a bunch of Group of Five teams. Well, as you know, the committee has not been kind to Group of Five teams because they value schedule strength so much. So I'm going to tell you right now, Utah State, 18th in the AP poll. Great story. I would be surprised if they're any higher than 24th or 25th, if they're in there at all. Houston debuts. Houston could be. Houston, by the way, Bruce, is now my pick to be the Group of Five representative. I mean, they are rolling people, and I even saw that in person when they played Arizona. I think they're going to beat UCF.
I've seen it in person, not them rolling people, but I saw De'Ara King at Lubbock in the only game they lost. He was really good.
He's fantastic.
Their defense was not up to the task. But I do think, look, Major Applewhite, not to go too far down the road on this, Major Applewhite made a controversial hire, quite honestly. Kendall Briles, we know about, you know, the baggage from the Baylor days. I don't know how to even describe it. You know, it was a hire that a lot of people are going to, like, kind of shriek at a little bit. But their offense is really good, really, really good. And Kendall Briles, the offensive coordinator, I mean, that's reality. I mean, he's done a very, very nice job with their offense. And Major's got it going there.
Yeah, they won't be 17th. They'll be in there. I don't think they'll be 17th. And, you know, and of the Power Fives, I wouldn't be surprised if West Virginia is a little lower than 12th. They're 6-1, one loss team. They'll probably be, as I'm looking at this now, the AP, as they often do, went in straight order of losses. I wouldn't be surprised if West Virginia is behind a couple 2-loss teams, Florida for one, possibly the Texas team that they're playing this week, just because those other teams have, you know, big signature wins on their resume. But yeah, Tuesday night, it's always an interesting week now in college football, the first time we get a crack at those rankings. It's also, keep in mind, new chairman, Rob Mullins from Oregon, and 6 of the 13 members are new. So as much as we love to try to use past results to predict the future with the committee, that's a lot of new people. That's a lot of new blood. They might look at things differently than committees of the past.
That's what I always said. I feel like I said that to you like a week or two ago. You're like, well, we've learned anything. I'm like, we haven't learned anything, because it's always rip it up and let's make it up as we go along.
Honestly, you know, I have spent a lot of time and energy over the last 4 years analyzing the committee, and I guess I'm a little bit of a cynical state right now after last year, after they put in, you know, Alabama, which didn't have a resume, just because they thought they were one of the four best, which they probably were, and as they certainly proved. I'll believe it when I see it, if there's any, that they actually do something more nuanced than pick the four best teams. I mean, pick the four teams with the best records.
Yeah, I'm with you.
Okay, from Juan Martinelli, love the pod, Stu Bruce. Thoughts on Miami's offense and bad QB situation in year 3 of Mark Richt? We should have put them in that conversation about disappointing teams.
I will say this. I think Manny Diaz has done a terrific job on defense for Mark Richt. I think the offensive side of it has been very suspect, and they have some speed. Now, look, they've had some injuries. Amon Richards, you know, career took a bad turn. Jeff Thomas is a really dynamic receiver, but they've had some concerns. They've been bad on the offensive line, and Mark Richt's son is on the offensive staff, so that makes it a little delicate if you're going to make some shifts. Thomas Brown, his offensive coordinator, is a guy. He's been, you know, he's a former player of his. They are like 72nd in the country in yards per play, and when you look at what they've done, so they really got nothing accomplished against LSU. They did put up big yards against Savannah State, but come on, that's 77-0 at Savannah State. Did a nice job against a pretty good Toledo team. But then you start looking at who they only had 350 yards against UNC in a game they blew them out. Struggle with Florida State. I think there are some pretty hard questions that need to get answered, you know, by Mark Richt there, because defensively, they're a lot better than they were before. And I think, you know, obviously a lot of people talked about the turnover chain, and Manny's done a really good job making, you know, getting a lot of TFLs and putting people behind the sticks. But they were winning with turnovers in defense last year, and that couldn't carry them that long because their offense has been so inept. Just 27 points combined the last 2 weeks against UVA and Boston College. Like I said, some really hard questions. I think there's been, I'm not saying Mark Richt is on the hot seat, because he is not, but I think they need to get better on offense sooner, or else he's going to have to make some moves or address some things that he probably doesn't want to do if this program is really serious about becoming a top 10 team again.
The turnover chain was a great, great story last year. It was a lot of fun. But as I tried to warn people at the time, there is a lot of luck involved in turnovers, and if you have a year where you gain a disproportionate number of turnovers, oftentimes the next year you're on the wrong end of it. And so they're starting to, you know, we saw it towards the end of last year where they started to regress to the mean a little bit, but I did expect them to be better this year. I think he's really driving people nuts with this quarterback situation. I mean, he's coached a lot of great quarterbacks over the years. You should probably trust his judgment on it. But when you see, you know, what N'Kosi Perry did when he was in there, and then you see how badly Roger's struggling, and yet he keeps telling everybody, nope, we're definitely sticking with Malik because he's given us the best chance to win. You know, it's hard for the fans to stomach.
This question is from Joel Teolro. Sorry, Joel, if I got that wrong. It's funny. I see this question. I immediately think about Mike Frances. Stu and Bruce, I love the pod. As always, keep going with the long episodes. Is it time finally for people to start realizing how underrated Dino Babers is and what he has done at Syracuse? They have beaten a top 20 team in Virginia Tech in 2016, then 17, then they beat a playoff team in Clemson. 2018, they had Clemson beat, but came up just short in Death Valley, dominated Florida State, and just beat a ranked NC State team. And they are already bowl eligible. Joel, good question. Joel, you are 100% right. Stu, is he?
Oh, I mean, first of all, Syracuse aced that when they made the hire in the first place. Dino Babers was exactly what that program needed. And you saw some signs of it the first 2 years, but obviously, you know, they would get those big upsets and they couldn't put it all together. But now they're 6-2. They are ranked for the first time since 2001. I feel like we've had a lot of first time since 2001s on this podcast. There's a great stat in the comments, actually, to Chris Vanini's most interesting stats of the week. Bob H. said, Syracuse has scored 50-plus points 4 times this season. That's as many as in the previous 14 years combined. I mean, people forget just how miserable Syracuse football was for so long there. And so they're scoring points, they're winning games, they took Clemson to the wire at Death Valley. I think it's an exciting time to be a fan of the Orange.
With you 100%. I mean, you know, they almost ended up with Chris Ash there. Chris Ash opted for the Rutgers job.
And Chris Ash I didn't know that. Chris Ash chose Rutgers over Syracuse?
Yeah, facilities-wise, it was more attractive. And to be honest, the recruiting base is much better in New Jersey than it is in upstate New York. So I could understand that.
Do you remember in the 80s or early 90s, the Saturday Night Live skit, Bad Idea Jeans?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I think we should get Chris Ash a pair of Bad Idea Jeans for that one. Bruce, let me tee you up here from Ian in Kirkland, Washington, who, by the way, I think is the fan that came up to you about the Audible.
He was. He had cute family. I think he has a wife and 2 kids were there, I want to say.
So your famous book, Meat Market, which came out, what, 10 years ago at this point, where you were embedded with Ogeron at Ole Miss. If you could do it again in 2018, who would you embed with?
That's a good question. So let me start on the front end. And when I say that, I mean, from a book sales standpoint, if you did anything with a place that had a humongous fan base attached to it, i.e. Ohio State, Notre Dame, Alabama, Texas, I think you have a chance to sell a lot of books because there's fascination there. What I loved most about doing the book around Ole Miss at the time was because, which didn't have obviously the huge fan base, but you had, one, a coach who was known as a great recruiter, which Ogeron is, and two, you had a fascinating character to take this narrative through. You know, Georgia obviously had a bigger, much bigger fan base, and Mark Richt was bringing in big classes, but I don't think it would have been anywhere near as interesting a story. So having prefaced everything saying that, I would be looking for who's a very interesting character and who really cares about recruiting. Mike Leach is a very interesting character. When it comes to recruiting, it wouldn't be the same kind of book. So I would say just it has to be somebody who's a head coach who's all over recruiting and a head coach who's interesting. You know, Saban would certainly be an obvious choice, and no matter how big the fan base is, it's still good. I'm trying to think of somebody who's not that obvious, so like a Saban or an Urban Meyer or a Jim Harbaugh or
Mike Gundy.
Yeah, Mike Gundy's interesting.
Anything like, you want a character? How about the guy who went into a press conference the other night and asked about something involving Twitter, made a fart noise?
Yeah, Mike Gundy's interesting. He's viral. He's viral, Mike. I mean, viral video, Mike. Stupid. Didn't mean it that way. Tom Herman, the other guy who had the little, I don't know if you call it a confrontation or whatever that was, but Tom Herman is interesting, you know, because Tom Herman's really interesting. He'd actually be really high on my list of the ones who are not the totally obvious one. I would throw some other ones. Matt Campbell, fascinated by how he does what he does.
How about Dabo?
Because Dabo is one of the obvious ones, those two. he was one of the four obvious ones, I would have said. You know, Neil Brown is really interesting, but again, the Troy is so much smaller of a fan base that I think it would be a tougher book sell, to be honest. I mean, just for publisher's sake. But I think he has a really interesting perspective on things and how he approaches stuff. You know, like I said, Matt Campbell would be one who would fall into the not the traditional top 25 powerhouse program. I would put Gary Patterson in there, even though they've had a bunch of top 25 teams. I mean, when we do our meetings with Gary, he will tell you a lot of stuff about how he views things. And so I think he would be really, really interesting to follow. And he'd probably be really exhausting to follow, but he would be very interesting to follow for a couple of years. I'm thinking of trying to think of somebody who's maybe not that. I would right now like to see Scott do that on Scott Frost in Nebraska.
Yeah.
Huge fan base, thirsty as could be for that stuff. And we've seen he has a good eye for talent with some of this stuff. I mean, Chip Kelly is a no-brainer for me on that too, you know, and because he's, you know, the expression, he's not suffering fools. He's not putting up with the kid who, you know, one thing I hear a lot from coaches is how much social media has changed dealing with recruits and the timetable, and it frustrates a lot of coaches. I don't think Chip Kelly's going to put up with a lot of stuff that a lot of the other coaches might to get a four-star. So I would put him high on the list as well.
Yeah, I think it would be a lot different book. I mean, obviously the recruiting culture has changed completely, social media being a big part of that. I also think people would want to see how certain staffs use advanced, you know, they use, some staffs are now using analytics or, you know, certain programs to help refine recruiting. Obviously the support staffs are much bigger. You know, I assume LSU at that time did not have like a player personnel department. I'm sorry, Ole Miss. If you go to one of these bigger programs, there's a whole infrastructure now of people devoted to recruiting. So,
well, they did. I mean, they had at Ole Miss at the time, like one of the early personnel guys they had was Kent McLeod, who's really good. He's David Cutcliffe's right-hand guy. He's done a good job there. I mean, you ask Ed Ogeron, who's one of the best people in the business in that, he will tell you Kent is. He's really smart, and he would do a lot of his studies and analytics, I mean, for lack of a better term, work. And he had a staff under him. It wasn't as big and, I don't want to say bloated, as what you see at a lot of places now, but, you know, he had people working for him who do that. And so it's a lot's changed, though. A lot has definitely changed, especially the social media aspect of it.
Finally, we heard from our friend Jason Gorlewski for the first time in a while, and he gave us a compliment that I just wanted to put out there. He said, "The podcast sounds awesome. I can't believe people are complaining about a free podcast." So there was a little echo. Big deal. It's a free podcast. It's not like you're watching Avatar on IMAX. You guys shouldn't have to apologize for any sound issues. It'd actually be hardcore if you were to do the pod in a fire station or an emergency room. Now, there's some sound issues. Well, do you want to try that sometime?
Sure.
I feel like
it'll work, though.
Well, I feel like some of our past episodes have sounded like that to some degree. No, appreciate it, Jason, but I got to say, all podcasts are free as far as I know, and that doesn't mean there shouldn't be a certain sound quality, which we will be giving you very soon. You being on the road this week was not an ideal week to break out the new system. Shout-outs?
Why don't you go first, because you always make me go first.
My shout-out goes to the Oregon State Beavers, who have been just absolutely miserable for the last couple years, and there is no reason to think otherwise on Saturday when they got down 31-3 on the road to Colorado, and they somehow managed to come back and win that game in overtime. Should have won it in regulation, missed an extra point, but they went on to win it in overtime and break a very long road drought. So congratulations to Jonathan Smith.
All right, Stu, my shout out goes to Wake Forest Matt Colburn. This is the ultimate comeuppance story. The Wake Forest running back rushed for 243 yards and 3 touchdowns as Wake Forest demolished Bobby Petrino's Louisville team 56-35. Why is this such a big deal? Because for Colburn, he had actually been committed to play for Louisville, and Bobby Petrino pulled his scholarship 2 days before signing day and wanted him to gray shirt, which would meant he would have had to be part of the following year's class. So he got the last laugh on Petrino. And by the way, he's had a really nice career at Wake Forest, over 2,000 yards. He was a former Mr. Football finalist in the state of South Carolina. And two of his, now that's the second time he has gone over the 100-yard mark against Louisville. Last year they beat them 42-32, and he had 134 yards rushing. Shout out to Matt Colburn. You were probably got a lot of big fans because Bobby Petrino is not the most popular guy in football.
Yeah, I think people kind of enjoy when there's some comeuppance there at his expense. And boy, you talk about how quickly college football can change. 2 years ago, 2016, I covered a game at Clemson. Lamar Jackson against Deshaun Watson went right down to the wire. Clemson stopped Louisville, just a receiver just short of the chains on fourth down on what could have been the game-winning drive. Well, the two teams reunite on Saturday at Clemson, and Dabo's team is a 37-point favorite.
And you're going to take the...
Let me think for a
second. Too soon, huh?
Well, they just beat Florida State 59-10. After thinking about it, I like the Tigers. I like the Tigers to cover 37, believe it or not. Trevor Lawrence going to have himself a game.
By the way, speaking of Clemson, do you know they got a couple of votes, number one votes in the coaches poll?
No, I didn't. I guess I didn't realize that, but, you know, I'm fine with that. I frankly think that this would be a good year to have the BCS because I think it should be. I think it's going to be Alabama Clemson.
Okay, we can talk about that much more later.
I just think those are the two, and I think that they're very, you know, that Clemson is very much. If Clemson were to play Alabama tomorrow, I by no means would think Alabama is definitely going to win.
All right, we can talk about that much later on, still. So
much later on, we'll have time for that leading into January. All right, everybody enjoy the playoff show Tuesday night. There's actually some great games in the middle of the week this week, starting with some action. Now that baseball's over, we can all watch college football practically every night of the week. We'll see you next time. If you haven't done so already, please subscribe to the Audible at Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, wherever you get your podcasts. We'd like to thank our producer, Nick Fink, and we'd like to thank Kevin and the Octaves for our intro song, Dangerous. You can download their music on iTunes or Spotify. If you haven't subscribed to The Athletic yet, what are you waiting for? Read both myself and Bruce and all our other great writers there. Go to theathletic.com/theaudible and get 25% off. You can also follow our coverage at The Athletic CFB. You can follow me at SL Mandel. Follow Bruce at Bruce Feldman CFB. We'll see you next time. Come on, get over here.